You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're here on Answers for the Family. I am just now back from an excellent IECA conference in San Francisco, and one of the things that I get from those things is that the feeling that you get when you're around so many incredibly caring people all in one place, I wouldn't miss those. I mean, even if things occurred to where I wasn't in the industry, I can tell you I would still go to those just to be around those people. It's a great feeling. I always come back very energized. We have with us two of those incredibly caring people with us. We have Kelly Dunbar, who is the Director of Admissions for Carl Brook School, and we have Tim Brace, who is the headmaster of Carl Brook. Welcome.
Wow. Good to see you.
Hey, it's great to have you here. Now, we also have our co-host today is Rob Spencer, and Rob is the manager of West Shield Adolescent Services. Rob, great to have you.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody.
All right. Well, let's get right in it. One of the things that we want to talk about is Carl Brook. And to start off with, tell us a little bit about the history as to why this was started and, you know, what was the vision, the philosophy going into this?
Well, Alan, it to me was a labor of love that came out of a dream and vision of a couple of former students of programs back in the late 80s, a guy named Grant Price and his buddy and partner while they went to school, Justin Merritt, and one of their colleagues named John Henson. And they had this vision and dream in the 80s that when they were going through treatment that they could probably do it a lot better than the people doing it, which really comes up a lot of the times. But as they went on with their careers and stuff in college and finished that, and Justin was actually in law school at Harvard, about to finish up there, and Grant was working as a consultant. And the two of them got together and put this all down, a pro forma and business plan. I had been working in the industry for 20 years at that point, and had been a headmaster at a couple of different schools and programs. And they asked me if I would join them in this, and come September 11th, 2001, they closed on a piece of property in South Central Virginia, and we pulled together October 15th of that year and put a mission together to really work with some really bright young adolescents, 15 to 18, and see if we could provide a college preparatory opportunity for young people that had been struggling. And February 1st, 2002, we had started hiring. That's when Kelly joined us early on to help get it started. We brought in, I think, some of the finest faculty that we could find throughout the country who really put a dream to life. Mm-hmm. And Carl Brook opened its doors February 1st with six young men. And we're sitting here 7.5 years later, 383 alumni.
Wow.
31 about to graduate the end of this month, and heading off to colleges throughout the country. When they come to us, they usually come through educational consultants throughout the country. And
why don't you name drop a little bit on the colleges?
Ah,
those are pretty legitimate.
That's right.
That's a pretty good track record.
Well, we've been really, really happy. We just on the way back at IECA in San Francisco, we gathered a group of the alumni together, 20 of them, and went to the Giants baseball game. And they were sitting with two kids from at UC Berkeley into mm-hmm. their junior year at UC Berkeley, which we have another young lady that just is joining them in the fall. And we had a young man that had graduated from Georgetown, got a full ride to Stanford for his master's degree. He joined us. And San Francisco State,
SC?
University of San Francisco, all in that group. And
USC.
Yeah, mm-hmm. USC too.
We've got a kid at USC here in LA, and a number of the schools here, two at Whittier that we've checked in with yesterday at a Dodgers game. So when we go from traveling here, we stop in and meet with alumni, and then the alumni parents too. Last night we did a regional parent group at Beverly Hills.
And on the East Coast, just to name
drop.
Go ahead,
please go.
Please,
name dropper.
Yeah. Well, you asked us. Ithaca, UNC Chapel Hill, some nice little places.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I find it interesting because, Tim, I mean, I've referred to you as someone who has literally inspired a generation of students. And now some of these students you inspired many years ago have formed this incredible school that they brought you in to as headmaster.
Well, that is what took me by surprise in some ways and was really an honor. And if I'm going to do a swan song of anything, what better way, if you've worked in this field, is to take former students that you've worked with, seen them develop their dreams and their aspirations and that realized potential, have it happen, and to share that with them and create our own dream. The beauty of this, Alan, that inspired me more than anything is these are really dynamic. Probably would have been classified oppositional back in the day and definitely had their issues. But to channel that type of energy and to want to create a dream and reach out to a number of other kids that really do need that are bright, that have that ability, but for whatever, emotional family issues, they've fallen off the wagon, so
right.
to speak, and to take that oppositionality or that bipolar tendencies that sometimes get labeled way too early, and to focus that into a vision and dream and to have them realize that.
Well, Kelly, what is the ideal student for Carlbrook?
Typically, they're, of course, age-wise, we don't take students younger than 15. And so 15 to 18, we have a lot of people call us, my son or daughter's turning 18 next month, is it too late? And I say absolutely not. We average age on our campus right now is 17 and a half, and we do, I think, a really great job of keeping those kids turning 18 because they realize early on that this is an opportunity for them. And even if they would rather be at home or somewhere else, they're still at that place because of the safety and other things that we've managed to accomplish at the campus. They're able to work through that turning 18 and finish high school and go on. So 15 to 18-year-olds, diagnostically speaking, we take students who struggle with depression, anxiety issues, either school or socially related, but really nothing more significant than that. I describe them in layman's terms as good kids making bad decisions, and I think a lot of us can relate to that. And then behaviorally, we have a range. We have students who have never experimented with drugs or alcohol, and we have students who have used and abused and everything in between. So behaviorally, it's hard to pinpoint the type of student, but diagnostically, they're fairly mild on the spectrum. Should be going to colleges, but because some of the decisions they're making may not have that opportunity. So this is an opportunity for parents to intervene and get them back on track.
Well, that's great. And actually, when you brought that up, I've used that same quote that you just
had.
Well, and I used it on an airplane, and I'm transporting someone, and I'm wearing a shirt that says, you know, West Shield Adolescent Services, transporting teens to a better future.
Yeah.
And the woman sitting on the other side of me, she keeps staring at the shirt. She leans up and looks and goes, I know who you are. You pick up those bad kids and you take them to those programs. And I've got the child on the other side of me, you know. And I looked over and I smiled and I said, actually, ma'am, I'm the person who picks up good kids that have made a few bad decisions and takes them to great programs where they can gain growth from that. And she sat back in her chair and shut up the rest of the flight.
We have people ask us that all the time. Oh, you work with those bad kids. No, we don't.
No.
And I don't fill in anything other than that. And they just kind of look at me. Well, don't you work at? And I go, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, aren't they? No. I go, they're good kids making bad decisions.
Right. And in many cases, very, very highly intelligent kids who maybe were just functioning outside the bubble of what society wants them to function within, and maybe the rest of us don't get it.
Right.
So, and that's the description that I give many times, because a lot of them are extremely bright, which now goes to the fact that some of which decided to open up this school that's been very successful.
That's another criteria academically and intellectually. Students must have a full-scale IQ of 106 because we do operate with some, you know, some fairly...
Bold. You're out.
Well, me too, but I'm not. I don't have to be a student.
Can I at least come visit?
Yeah. Oh, Rob, you're there. I get
that. Well, speaking of academics, why don't you break down some of the academics, and for the parents that are listening, or even some of the professionals that are out there, what are the academics that these kids are going to go through, and especially the ones that are starting out, they're a little behind. I mean, a lot of them we're picking up that are runaways. They're going into a school setting, but because they haven't been going in a while, they're behind. Are you getting them caught up and then some?
Absolutely. The way our system is set up is we're on a 9-week quarter system, so we're able to have the students go through 5 9-week quarters during a calendar year. So that gives us the opportunity to have them do some catch-up work. We call it, well, we talk a lot about their transcripts being train wrecks, so we're maybe we should put on our business card the keeper of the train wrecks. I'm not sure, but so that true college prep curriculum, most of our teachers on the campus are master's level in the field of their discipline. Average class size is 8 students, so they're getting that good
That's
attention
huge.
In the classroom.
Yeah. Yeah, for real, for
we
real.
Provide a lot of structure every evening. Every student on the campus has study time. So again, you're dealing with kids who are more prone to doing what their friends do, and if all their friends are studying, they're going to take it a little more seriously. So, and then, you know, in the English classes, I think probably one of the best things about our English department is we don't say you're taking an English 9, 10, 11, or 12 class. They get to choose from exploring the Da Vinci Code to Greek literature to what other ones, Tim? Can you think of any? Dispelling the myths
study of Herman
fairy
Hesse
tales.
And, yeah. Women's studies, yeah. A lot of literature on women's studies to really help with that.
Good luck.
Right.
So we're appealing to, we really right. are appealing to their intellect, and because they get to choose some of those classes, they have a little bit more buy-in, and it's exciting. I want to sit on a lot of the classes mm-hmm. there.
Well, really a lot fun. Of it that's really nice too, Alan, just to add on to that, we have 17 courses that provide AP classes as well, because we're working with these bright kids, and the opportunities once they have the structure, once they get back in and focus on their academics, what they can do is just amazing. You raise the bar, they will actually come up to that bar when given an environment that feels safe enough and that they can do that. We also have dual credit courses that they can be involved in with the.
So they're also getting college credit?
College credit. Excellent. For those olders that possibly are close to finishing up their diploma but still are within the curriculum of the program there, they can take some dual credit that could be transferable to the colleges they go to when they leave. We teach Latin. We mm-hmm. teach 3 different foreign languages. We're pretty excited about what we offer there.
Being someone who was there in the beginning, one of the things that I was impressed with was that it was part of the curriculum, character development. Yeah. I mean, I just thought that was huge. It was something, obviously, I wish that they also had in the public school system. Tell us a little bit about the character development.
Well, a lot of the character development that we've done is really the school was based on 10 principles that we really thought would be great for education under the umbrella of honor. And so we teach elements of honesty and integrity and compassion and friendship, and we really get into courage, vivacity, perseverance, and understanding, and respect and honor. Those were the 10 principles that we did. And so we really have workshops available to look and focus and deal with true adolescent issues, but also the values going on in the world that they're seeing. And so they matriculate through that, and it brought into everything they do. The one that we've gotten really into recently, just found the kids thrive with, is service orientation and giving mm-hmm. back. And so we've had a lot of youngsters. We work with the Habitat for Humanity in the community there in Danville, which is a small, pretty depressed town right now. It was into tobacco, as you can imagine, and textile industry back in the day. And obviously those industries have dried up. So there's a lot of service that we can provide to the youth there in the community, to battered women situations where the kids go out and really help out with some of the young people there. The older people in the community, we've gone and shared our art, talents, and just service to the community.
Well, we also do, when we're working with the kids on the character development, we talk a lot about, I mean, I don't know if, I'm sure there's people listening that have experienced the blues or depression, or, and one of the things we talk a lot about with the kids is the only way to keep the gifts that you have is to give them away. And so we do, and we tie that into the community service. And the kids really are impressive in their service of giving, and they love going to the Boys and Girls Club in Danville, and they love holding the hands of the older people at the adolescent homes. And it's just really fun to watch them, because they're coming into themselves and truly identifying that they do have a gift. And when they smile, other people smile with them.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything more important. I mean, to me, if there was one thing that we could add to the public school system, it would be to get them more involved in giving back.
Right. We've seen it over and over. We were just talking to some of the alumni, and we have a young man that graduated in December, and, you know, is going to actually NYU and performing. He's going to be in the performance arts there. He's quite a talented young man from the L.A. area, which was pretty exciting for his family to share that he was just accepted to NYU. But he's over in Ghana right now. He got into a program working with little children, trying to assist them and learning language, understand. The dad was just thrilled that mm-hmm. he was just the first white young man that these people had seen, and they would just go up and touch him and such like that. And we've had a number of that in Costa Rica, some of these third world type service projects that they've done, as well as in the country too, in the United States, that kids are going in and helping at summer camps or at volunteer work, even when they graduate, which is a wonderful thing.
Is that what that was? Come on. I was like, man, somebody is clicking like crazy.
That's my buddy Tim.
click, click, click. I was hoping it wasn't like his bones and stuff. Talking about, you know, the age thing all the time.
Oh, I didn't think we were going to bring that up here. Oh. I'm the young one here.
You know what I think is kind of interesting is that it's amazing how far it goes along, kind of like what me and Alan were talking about in the car. I'll leave Alan out of my opinions and just own him as my own about how dumb people really are. It's funny how through all of these generations, how mankind have tried so hard to run away from the principle of putting other people before you,
right,
makes you a better person and makes you a happier person, makes you more joyful and peaceful person, that it always comes back to that. No matter where we are in society, no matter what ecchio status you are, or race or gender, it always comes back to the selflessness being the key to a person being the best they can be and being the happiest they can be. I find that hugely interesting.
Perfect, Robin. And mm-hmm. what's really neat within the community, the campus too, is we have a big brother, big sister type program, so that when Kelly brings in new students here, immediately they're met by two older students, older being they've been at the school longer, brought into the community there. They have a big brother, a big sister type mentor student that these kids all of a sudden are giving back in the tradition of people that gave to them. And they come in and start building the safety and the bond that you want there and sharing, you know, God, I know what it's like to have gone through what you've just gone through. I was there too.
I totally, in my opinion, I really wish that more people, more educational programs, more even public school, would focus more on teaching kids. Math is math, to be quite honest.
Right.
I don't even remember math class, and I'm fine. You know what I mean?
Right.
But well, can to we have take somebody...
Can we take a vote on that?
But to have somebody teach the kids how to be better people, how to give back, that is hard. It's priceless. I mean, that is such a great core value to teach.
And one of the things that
You have nice hair, by the way.
Oh, thank you. So do you.
He's painting a picture of what we're doing.
Yes.
The old man and the lady with nice hair. I like
that. We got an old crickety guy. We got this lovely, beautiful lady with flowing brown hair.
Thanks, Rob. That's right. I appreciate that. Yeah,
you flattery will get you everything.
I'll give him my card later.
Yeah, there you go.
One of the things that when you ask new students when they arrive at the school after they've settled in a little bit, you can imagine how daunting the task is. They hear they can't have their iPods anymore, and they, you know, there's some rules on our campus that the typical teenager isn't going to enjoy. But one of the things that they always come back to and always talk about when you ask them later, what made your stay at Carl Brook the way it was, and they always come back to the friendships they make.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to your point, Alan, earlier in the show, is we forget how important connections are, because in this day and age we're so focused on what we can get, materialism, you know, whatever. And our kids get an opportunity to really connect with their friends, connect with the adults, and it really does fill their hearts. That sounds a little cheesy, but it's true.
Not at all.
They talk a lot about, you know, when you think about when you were in high school, and it's all about your friends, but also part of that high school experience is cliques, feeling unsafe around a certain group of people because you may not fit in, or trying to fit in, so you're willing to do whatever it takes to be a part of that group. And as one of our Jeff Georgi from Duke talks about, we're herd animals. So are teenagers. They want to be a part of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids talk all the time about how their experience at Carl Brook is so different than anything they've experienced, because that we don't have cliques on the campus. We don't have groups of people that clump together to make it unsafe for everybody else. We talk about the importance of emotional and physical safety, and they take it seriously. And going back to Tim's point of the big brothers and big sisters, our older kids in the program take it seriously when new kids come in to make them feel as warm and welcomed and nurtured as possible. And it's what makes Carl Brook special.
That, you know, we come from the 80s. Even the kids, the parents of the kids that are at your program, they've come through this time where they've vested everything they had into this program of status quo, of obtaining a certain level of wealth will obtain a certain level of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got there, and it's like, oh, crap. Now what do we do?
Right.
We've gotten here, and we're still just as miserable, maybe worse. And the difference is, now with these new generations, we're starting to kind of get it, that it is all about relationships. It is all about the things that matter, substance, love,
right?
You know, and how to live at that level. You know, I explain it like if me and Alan were on what's a busy intersection by our house, Beach and Warner, at
right.
5 o'clock, and Blaze is out there with us, or Chase. You know, right. and we're talking, and it's 5 o'clock, and we're just kind of in the zone, and we're talking about success and how we're going to accomplish all this stuff, and we're like, yeah. And for a brief moment, you take your eye off your son, and he falls into the street. How, without a hesitation, you will go and get him,
right.
And that's unconsciously living life on a certain level of love.
Okay.
Where if we were there the day earlier talking about, yeah, you know, all the success and things we're going to do, and I say, Alan, hey, look, there's $20,000 in a bag in the middle of the street. Go get it. You know now that if I go out there, I'm going to get drilled by this car, and the $20,000 will do me no good.
Right.
You know, it's a level of consciousness that we have, to where if you instill the values that you guys are talking about, that you guys kind of instill into your program of your kids, they start to get the unconscious competence,
right,
of living on a certain level of value, which is huge.
Right, and that is how you build leaders, and those are the leaders that we want. And that's what I see in schools like this, is that we need leaders to where honor, compassion, you know, community service, giving back, looking at all of us as a whole. How can I help all of us? Not how can I help myself?
Yes.
And unfortunately, our media is set up to show everybody out there that it doesn't need to be that way, because it shows all the dirt. It shows a lot of the people that are out there, our politicians and such, that it's all about me. And so that's why I, like, as I started the show, that's why I feel so good about when I come from the environment that you present, mm-hmm. and that you're now presenting for the next generation, then you have hope. You have hope. The next generation, we're going to raise leaders. We're going to raise the type of leaders that we want in power.
Right.
And that's what I see with what you're doing, which is why I appreciate it so much.
Well, I think as we talk about it, it brings up to me that I'd really like to make a statement that adds to the safety of the school is the dedication and commitment of our staff that have moved from really, you know, wonderful educations themselves and opportunities throughout the country, and to move to this little small community in Virginia, and what they give to me as an adolescent. I wished I'd had some older mentor or something. You'd go to your coach maybe if you were lucky, or scouts or something like that, and hopefully there were some older people, and to walk around the campus and to work with our advising or therapeutic staff or the teaching faculty there, it's become very contagious within the community, and to see our executive team is involved with the kids from the day we started till right now. I mean, everyone is involved, almost models for these young people to look at of living a healthy life. How do you do this? How do you take challenge, which we all face, mm-hmm. and turn that around and be able to give back and to do for others? And so, yeah, it's kind of a plug for the people that work there, because I think we have the finest staff. A man named Dr. Gillen Smith is our new dean of advising, and his assistant Greta, and their team of advisors, we call them, that are master level therapists, have just provided that element of not only assisting kids through their struggles, but with love and with care. And we definitely have some issues that we have to bring in and bring to bear. These are kids that have gone out and really done a little carnage behind them by their behaviors, to be kind with it, you know, and involved with drugs, or stuck in a room on an internet, not knowing how to get out of that antisocial and lack of social skills, and how to really go out there, or, you know, literally have been spoiled in some ways and not had to struggle. So we have to also bring in that challenge to them, and have them have their own personal struggles, and allow us to get out of the way and let them fall on their tails a little bit and learn how to pick themselves up, or this is not going to work. But they can always know at the end of the day there's somebody that's going to wrap an arm around them, look them in the eye, and really listen to them. And I think that's a huge part of what we're finding our success to be.
Well, the latest research is for kids to learn they do require safety. They require love and connection. And that is, and so it does allow the kids, when they step foot onto the campus, both personally and academically, to really grow and imprint memories into their brain, so that they can always have a reflecting point. I felt the best when. So right. That when they are in the big bad world, and on the college campuses, when they're feeling down or they're being exposed to things that, you know, they probably shouldn't be exposed to, they can take a step back and say, wait a minute, I don't need to go this route.
Well, yeah, and our prior guest, and we talked a lot about the physical safety, but I think when what you're talking about, the emotional safety is really so much more important. I mean, if you do not feel emotionally safe to be able to open up about these problems, you're not going to work through them. You're going to carry them along through life into college or into your relationship. Right. So I think that's huge. And to be able to provide both now, because, how do you create the safety both physically and psychologically?
Well, I think one of the points, too, is when there's emotional safety, you almost don't have to worry about the physical safety, because you don't have to worry about somebody just coming up and popping you. It just doesn't happen, because kids are, they really want to encourage and inspire each other. Tim, you want to talk about?
Well, and Tim, what I want you to talk a little bit about the way in which they're taught to vent their frustrations or to vent their disagreements with someone else.
Well, we do have group sessions three mm-hmm. times a week, which is an opportunity for people to get in there and just talk about the issues. And I think it is set up in the tradition of the school now that they can go in there. This is where if we're having difficulties in the dorm or classroom or somebody's taking something that's driving you crazy, here's a venue that you could go in there and confront those issues in a healthy way, where you have the support of your colleagues and a couple staff that are in there to really work through some of those issues. But I think one of the things that goes along with that, Alan, is setting up a real clear boundaries, that they know what the boundaries are. That we call them standards. And here's the way we are able to have a community that can bring this safety. And thus, by having those standards, you actually set the foundation that there is a reason for everything that we do there. And you might not understand that initially, but it is to provide safety. So obviously there's no use of drugs and there's no violence allowed and some very basic tenets. But we get into, you know, okay, how does a classroom run, or how do we eat and dine and how do we handle ourselves in any situation? So we have those standards, and then when there's violations of those standards, you've got to have people that will follow through and call on that.
Right.
You've got to have consequences that meet the violation of the standard or something, and a safe environment to, okay, yeah, I blew it, but here's a way I can get back into it. And we teach, how do you earn back your integrity from the day they walk in? As I was indicating, one of the first principles was integrity. And yep, these are kids that have absolutely lost integrity with their families and with some of their friends. How do they build that back? It's not something that once you've blown it, that's it. We are a school of second, third, fifth chances in some ways. But how do you do that in a healthy way and hopefully come back stronger from it?
Well, let me throw out an example real quick of, this is my interpretation, so correct me if I'm inaccurate.
Absolutely.
But my interpretation of one of the benefits I saw of group is, if Rob and I are students, mm-hmm. And Rob does something that I feel has offended me in some way, and I'm angry about it, that, you know, my response can be, rather than, as you said earlier, pop somebody or whatever, it can be, you know what, I'm really angry about that, and I will see you, you know, we will get together in group, you know, tonight at 6 o'clock or whatever group is for that day. You know, so it's putting
it
off.
You do that, by the way.
What?
You do that, by the way.
Yeah.
Ryan is the actual other group.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that at that point in time, they're given an opportunity to, you know, to put it to a point where it's going to get settled.
Right.
Not to where, and I'm looking at it, you know, I don't want to be in a position where I'm going, wow, well, Rob's a lot bigger than me, you know, I just have to sit back and take it. You know, I can do that and then know that when we go in group, there's going to be other people. I'm safe to vent my feelings about that and feel like I, you know, I've been valued, my opinion's been valued in how I felt about that. Rob is then in a position to counter that and say, well, but I acted the way I did because I thought you were da 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 da. And to me, again, it's one of those things, we should be doing this in public school. We should be doing this to where everybody understands, the kids learn, this is how you do it in real life. You know, not that it's, you know, that you hit somebody or you run home and get a gun and come back and decide you're going to take everybody
all
out.
The media is telling the opposite.
Right. But the media is going to shine a light on all of these other things, you know, and then law enforcement is going to incarcerate you for doing it. But in between, nobody wants to go, you know what, why don't we just teach a better way?
Well, yes. And the best part about groups, in my opinion, is that ability to learn how to articulate how you feel. If you're going to take Rob to a group, you have to be clear about where your feelings are and maybe what drives them. It may not always be about Rob. It could be something going on inside of you.
Exactly.
And so you get a chance to process that. The other thing, again, going back to the materialistic, it's all about me world that we live in, it's also about I want it and I want it now. Well, if you're angry with Rob and you have to wait until group a couple hours later, you've had a chance to really process what that anger really is about.
Right.
And it gives the kids a chance to kind of sit down, stop, take stock, and not be so impulsive with their decisions. Because in 2 hours, you may go, oh my gosh, I overreacted
right.
that situation.
Right.
So it does. It gives them a chance to kind of stop and take stock and then move forward and not say things that might be hurtful in the moment. And I mean, what any of us wouldn't, I mean, it's just a nice way to...
I think those are all great ways to learn how to communicate, how to bridge the gap from that initial reaction,
right,
and all that stuff. When it comes to individual safety, the reality of it is this. Statistically, we just aren't going to be attacked. Environments are different, which some percentages are higher than other.
Right.
There are predators and victims out there. But what you guys do, which is really the key to that safety feeling, is you teach people how not to be victims by creating a security within themselves, by helping them through these 10 principles here, by helping them kind of get away from their own insecurities, because they find truth in these universal principles of truth right here.
Yeah.
And through that, it changes their mindset and changes the way they think and the way they carry themselves and the energy that they're putting out there. And that is what creates that safe environment initially. Now, there's always going to be conflict. And what you guys are doing is talking about resolving conflict.
Right.
But the initial gut thing is that core group that's instilled into the kids of these 10 principles that you guys have here, which is huge. Mm-hmm. And you would not believe the amount of people that don't get that. And the way that you guys do it here is so important and impressive.
It's important that you have the whole community working and looking towards that, from the adults to, I mean, it's amazing to me to see our food service and our medical department and transportation and maintenance, campus services, those people all of a sudden fall in line with, this is the way we do this here. And there is opportunities to process it, to talk about it, to focus, instead of running away from it and saying, oh my God, we've lost control, or these kids, this new generation, and oh my God, it's so different. No, we've got to go back to the core of what it is to get along with each other, and have that be a prominent part of any curriculum, that you can talk about that. That's character development. That's, if we live this way, these kids, they're kids. They're mm-hmm. kids. That's all they are. And their brains are developing. And our friend Jeff Georgi that Kelly referred to earlier, a man who did adolescent brain studies at Duke University with his friend Dr. Aaron White and his wife Becky, and they've come on board to really help us to even look at these recent studies in adolescent brain development that validates this kind of work that it has been going on, and all the practitioners of this type of, you know, tough love is a whole different thing now in my mind. It's really just being consistent with what you say and the principles you live by, an example of it, and following through and being attentive to it. Because these are kids whose brains are just developing. They are adolescents. They are going to challenge things. They want to be at the edge. That's the way we were hardwired.
They should be.
Right. And you've got to give them boundaries, and that they can bounce up against them, and that you're there to catch them and follow up with them, and no, we're not doing this.
Greatly put.
But one of the things, too, when you bring up the participation as far as the rest of the staff and things, one of the things that I know that you guys do, but if you could talk a little more about it, is the family participation. This used to be one of my pet peeves, you know, going back 25 years ago, was, you know, here we go out, we pick up a child, we take them to a program, we hear that they're doing really well, everything's going great, they go back home, 6 months later, we're getting a call. They've run away, or this has happened, and there was no aftercare, that the family didn't get into it, either because the program didn't have a way to do that, or the family just didn't buy in at all. So tell us about your family participation that you guys are doing.
Well, we have, right off the get-go, we ask every parent to come visit the school before they even come here. So that they, personally, before they invested in this education, they've met a lot of the key faculty, from Kelly, of course, as admissions director, and her assistant Claire, but the dean of advising, Dr. Bender, the dean of academics, even Grant Price, when he's available, will come and meet with each family that comes here. So that these are the people you'll be working with, and Andy Coe, our dean of students, myself, we're meeting them as they're touring around, and then we put on three parent conferences within the first year that they're there, that the parents all come, and eventually siblings and extended family if need be. We really talk and network, find out who else is going through these experiences, help put the parents through some of the languaging and the dynamics of the program so that they have that, multifamily groups when they get on the campus so that they see they're not alone in this situation, and process the visits that they will have then. And then in addition, there's conference calls at different times to work with that family situation as issues come up, regular communication, and just recently we've started what we call a family brain defense weekend where families that might have been involved in addiction issues historically and genetically, and these kids are about to leave, that they can come in and really do an intensive weekend. 2.5 months before they graduate, we have what we call a transition weekend, where all the families of the graduated come out there and they start working on the plan to have a successful plan when they leave here. And then I know we had talked, Alan, that you wanted us to mention this, that the thing we've been doing the last 2.5 years is a transition program that I think is unique in the industry, where we have Jonathan Gurney as our dean of alumni, and Allison Streeta and Anna Gerard take on all the alumni, and for a year we work with the families after they graduate and with the students. Some of these trips that we've been on, like we've done on these stuff, we visit them at the colleges they're at. We meet with some of the therapists that are working with them in the region they're at. We have regional gatherings of current families as well as alumni families. So we're following through. What was great at the Giants game that we went there, we had one of the students that was in the first 12 kids of the school that came out. He's 25 years old, and he came and was a part of sitting there with kids that had just graduated. So we've attempted in every way we can to continue a relationship with our alumni, and they are, to me, the greatest testimonial of what we're doing and are things working, and feedback to us. So where do we need to stay dynamic? What do we need to work on and possibly change that would have made this a more user-friendly experience for you when you leave here?
Yeah, I like the way you guys are creating an atmosphere that where the kids want to belong versus think they're being shipped off to.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing that Grant says all the time is he wanted to create a school where kids could feel proud to be from. So, and I noticed yesterday at the Dodger Stadium when we were with our kids, every single one of them still had their Carl Brook ring on. So nice. They do feel a part of something bigger than themselves, and it's I think it suits a need in them, and it just it really is they're great kids.
It's truly sitting in Dodger Stadium yelling and screaming and tears almost running down as one of our kids is up there dancing to the seventh inning stretch music and just all these kids that they didn't have to come from their colleges and see us and hang out on a hot, sunny day where you get sunburnt there. And most of them could care less about baseball. That wasn't it at all. But it was a wonderful place to just get together. And for them to take the time through traffic, you guys know it better than we do, to stand in line and know what you're going to do after that game to get back, just to reconnect. And, it's those emotional moments. To me, that's, I always say those are my paychecks, is to see these kids out there making a difference and doing something different.
One, with the recent hiring of Dr. Gillen Smith, he's been instrumental in opening the doors up to have parents fly out in between our parent conferences to do individual family work with a therapist. I think that's been really helpful for a large part of the campus too. They get the group work and then they get the individual piece that I think is imperative in healing the family.
I just glanced up at the clock. We've only got about 5 minutes. One of the things that I do want to ask is, what makes Carl Brook different from other therapeutic boarding schools?
This is just my opinion, Alan. I think what sets us apart from other schools is the academic piece. We truly do offer a college prep curriculum. The kids are in school Monday through Friday during regular school hours, 8 to 3:30. A lot of places say they're academic, but if you look at their academic schedule, it just doesn't add up. There are so many seat hours the kids are required to participate in order to get the appropriate credits. Our transition services offering Absolutely. is you know, and again, going back to the adolescent research, it's about the connection. Our transition counselors start interfacing with the students and families halfway into their program, so there's a relationship already established. So when the kids do go off to college or back to back home or wherever they're going, the person that they're on the phone with, they know, they have a relationship with, and I think it just makes it a smoother transition time. And then, of course, we with Jeff and Becky and Aaron White on the, as right, consulting staff for the recovery maintenance. I think we offer a very rich recovery maintenance and substance abuse programming that a lot of kids don't have the opportunity to have unless they fall victim to addictions and go to a treatment center. But we offer that part of the program to all of our students, whether or not they have a history or family history of addictions.
And just to add to that, just real quickly, I think the blending of a therapeutic model with clinical oversight in some ways. We've got a wonderful psychiatrist that joined us from Duke as well and started just seeing kids for medication management initially and got very involved and is on the campus 3 days a week seeing kids and working with our team, our master level therapist. I think we provide this dynamic kind of evolution that we keep trying to do with collaboration with Duke University, with our the clinical team, as well as trying to really maintain an educational community that these kids can feel that they were at school and these resources were available to them and their families and to our staff, that we're not trying to do this, just been there, done that, and so now we can do something. We want to be a dynamic, evolving force in education. And as you had said, Alan, to me, the most important thing that we provide is an opportunity for kids to get educated, take care of themselves, build their character, and then go out into the world and make a difference. And if we can accomplish that, then I think that's our goal. And we're oppositional enough to say, damn it, we're going to do it.
That's great.
Excuse me for cussing on radio.
Well, no, that's all right.
You did pretty good.
But it's internet radio, so we can do it.
Want me to say something really bad?
Or not. No? Which act? Now, I know you said 15 is the youngest. What is the oldest? Can I get 39 in?
No. We want 38. Bob.
38. Okay, 38.
Hey, guys, I'm actually going to be taking a trip out that way, maybe within the next few weeks. I would love to just come check out the school if you guys.
Oh, Rob,
I ask you on the air because it's hard to say no.
So. Yeah. I already told you you're invited.
There you go. Right, there
just
you go.
Call me. Okay.
Hey, that was that going to comment Farmville. You made about her hair and
I'm
her
invited.
Beauty that got
right.
you.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
You guys know where Farmville is?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Farmville. Where I'm going.
Oh,
I family there.
We're 45 minutes from.
45
Farmville.
Minutes.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Perfect. Come on down.
Perfect. Farmville's horrible, by the way.
Okay, well, we just lost our three listeners from Farmville now.
I think
okay.
There's only three people in Farmville.
Well, we lost all of them, the whole town. Okay, how can listeners get in touch with the school? How can they get in touch with you, Kelly? I know that as Director of Admissions, if you can give a website, because I know there's a lot of information on the website, as well as a phone number.
Our website is www.carlbrook.org. And my phone number is 434-476-2406, extension 8254. And I'd love to hear from anybody who has questions.
That is great. And if for some reason you are not able to get a hold of her or you have other questions, you can also send them to our website at answersforthefamily.com. That's answers, the numeral for thefamily.com, and we will forward them over. Again, I'm so happy to have you guys here. We've got about 2 minutes. Anything you want to close with other than the traffic you're going to have now trying to get out of here?
I want to thank you for the opportunity. Alan, we just talked in San Francisco, and you said stop by, and here we are. And to have the opportunity to just talk about it, to meet you, Rob, thank you very much for opening this opportunity to us. We do love our school, and we love what we do here, and to me, it's a testimonial of some dreamers. And in this world, if we can fulfill dreams and help people to get their dreams, my gosh, I think we can make that change that everybody's hoping for and looking for. And I'd like to affect education, and I'd like to be a part of a movement that does that and helps young people to have the opportunities that everyone should have. And it's a great time in our history to do that, and why not do it with every kid you can get your hands on?
But I'd like to think we're working with tomorrow's future, so any part we can have in making that happen is always a good thing. Thank you to both of you for having us.
Yeah. You're welcome, and thank you. And I want to close with just a little quote, and it says, unless the investment in children is made, all of humanity's most fundamental long-term problems will remain fundamental long-term problems.
Yeah. Wow.
Thank you guys for being here. We are out of here, and I will close with this, if I do it correctly. There we go.
I like it.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasts.